Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. As always, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. We've got a great PDF. It's 31 pages. It's on the top 200 drugs. It's a no-brainer if you're going through pharmacology classes, board exams, or if you just want a little refresher on the top 200 drugs and make sure you're up to speed out in clinical practice. So go get that for free. reallifepharmacology.com. All right, the drug of the day today is famotidine. Brand name of this medication is Pepcid. This is what's called an H2 blocker. Essentially, from a mechanism of action standpoint, this drug blocks the action of histamine in stomach parietal cells. So, basically, physiologically, what happens is histamine binds H2 receptors in parietal cells in the stomach, and these cells, parietal cells, are responsible for secreting gastric acid. So when histamine binds these H2 receptors, it stimulates the release of gastric acid, which lowers the pH. When we use famotidine, it blocks those receptors, so histamine can't bind. Therefore, we have less acid secretion, and it's going to help with symptoms of things like heartburn and GERD. And that indeed is the primary use. In my practice, that's probably 90 to 95% of the time. If I see famotidine, that's what it's being used for. However, there are some less common usages. I guess first associated with GERD is stress ulcer prophylaxis. That's going to be obviously more so in an institutional hospital type setting, so it can be used there. The unique uses that I have seen occasionally, one is pre-medication for some drugs that have infusion type reactions, and most often it's going to be associated with specific oncology agents. And when you think about infusion reactions, usually you think of corticosteroids being used to manage them, and or Benadryl or diphenhydramine, so an older antihistamine. And indeed, those are two of the more common medications used as kind of pre-treatment to prevent infusion reactions for certain medications. But in some situations, we may actually add on famotidine as well and get kind of a little added H2 blockade in addition to the antihistamine, the older first-generation antihistamines that are going to typically more block histamine receptors 1. The other unique use that I have seen a couple of times in my life, not terribly often in 10-plus years of practice, is urticaria or itching. And this is generally in severe cases. Patients that are taking, again, those older generation antihistamines that help with itch, your hydroxyzine, your diphenhydramine, in some cases you may see famotidine added on just to try and see if it helps at all. So again, that's kind of a down the road, last line type of option for itching and urticaria, but I have seen it a couple of times. All right, let's talk dosing a little bit. Typical dose, 10 to 20 milligrams twice a day. I do see it once a day. I do see it sometimes at night. I do see it sometimes in morning. And it may depend upon what's going on clinically with your patient. When do they have symptoms? When do they have most of their issues? Now, that's generally the dosing for kind of mild to moderate cases of GERD. In patients with frequent symptoms or severe symptoms of GERD, odds are likely we're probably not going to use an H2 blocker. The one exception might be in rare cases where we add on an H2 blocker on top of a PPI. Now, I have seen that quite a bit. The preferred way to do that typically, and the most common way that I've seen that utilized, is do your PPI in the morning before breakfast, as it's supposed to be administered, typically 30 minutes before breakfast. That's an ideal for a PPI. And then the famotidine is generally dosed in the evening. So that's how I've seen it most in practice. It's a little bit anecdotal as far as I think people using that, and you know, there may be a little bit of evidence for that, but I definitely, you know, see that when a PPI and an H2 blocker are used together in the same patient. I typically would not recommend using a PPI and H2 blocker at the same time. I don't think that's going to give you any real significant advantage, and obviously, from my perspective, is going to worsen polypharmacy and give patients another pill to take. So generally, yeah, I definitely discourage using them at the same time, giving them at the same time in the morning, for example, there. One thing I did want to mention, kind of going back to uses, there were some people purporting, and maybe still are, that it's beneficial for COVID. So anyway, at the time of this podcast, there isn't any really great evidence, and Infectious Disease Society of America does not approve of the use of famotidine except for in clinical trial for management of COVID. So again, IDSA does not recommend famotidine for COVID treatment at this time. Adverse drug reactions, from my perspective, anecdotally, I haven't seen a lot of adverse effects from famotidine, which is great, obviously. A couple things, you know, it might affect GI tract a little bit, constipation, diarrhea, depending upon the patient, maybe headache. Again, very low percentages, incidence of adverse effects there. One thing I did really want to mention was B12 deficiency. So that is something I have caught as a consultant, recognizing that if you see somebody being treated for B12 deficiency with supplementation, go take a peek at that med list and make sure famotidine isn't potentially contributing to that. And again, it kind of goes back to the point that I've made with PPIs and stuff in the past, is make sure you're reassessing these drugs. Don't just start them and leave patients on them forever. Make sure they actually continue to need it and the use is justified. So again, trialing down, tapering down, trying off, trying as needed only. Reduce and minimize the use of medications where possible, and that's going to obviously help us avoid things like B12 deficiency as an adverse effect. Famotidine does have OTC, over-the-counter availability, so patients can go to a store, pick it up. Obviously, they don't have to consult with a pharmacist. They don't have to consult with a physician, so that can be a little problematic in some situations, particularly if patients have more severe symptoms where something else might be going on medically and they haven't been assessed by a healthcare professional. So that OTC availability is obviously convenient, but on the flip side, we may miss some things if the patients don't come in right away and ask about the symptoms and what's going on. Now, if you're in a community, a pharmacy-type space, alarm symptoms to be worried about, blood, obviously, any sort of vomiting, that type of thing, weight loss, significant pain, blood in the stool might be indicative of GI bleed or black tarry stools. So those are some kind of alarm symptoms where if a patient reports that, that's something that they definitely need to go get assessed, possibly get some tests done, and so on and so forth. Pharmacokinetics, renal elimination. So that's important to remember. It is significantly eliminated by the kidney. So what that means, poor renal function, we're going to likely have to start dialing back on the dose. And there is recommendations for dosing. I'm not going to go through them. I just know it's one of those drugs that I look up if I see somebody's got, you know, CKD stage 3, CKD stage 4. I'm definitely going to look and see what the appropriate dose is there just to double check. Comparing it, famotidine to PPIs as far as duration of action, onset of action, famotidine generally is going to have a quicker onset of action. So patients might feel a little bit better, a little bit more quickly. with famotidine compared to a PPI. Now, definitely not as potent as an acid-reducing agent compared to PPIs, but it may work a little bit more quickly in certain situations there. It does, however, have a shorter duration, which makes sense. That's why we often dose this medication. If patients have symptoms all day, we're going to dose this generally twice a day. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material, like pharmacotherapy, ambulatory care, geriatrics, BCMTMS, or the psychiatric exam, go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. We've got a growing list of resources updated on an annual basis, and we've helped thousands of pharmacists pass their exam. So go check out meded101.com/store. In addition, if you're a nurse, PA, nurse practitioner, med student, physician, we've got books on case studies, clinical pearls. We've also got Audible books. My most recent release was Perils of Polypharmacy. Great review of case studies, geriatrics, polypharmacy, and some of the things that I've encountered in my practice as a clinical pharmacist. So go check out all those resources. Support the sponsor, meded101.com/store, STORE. All right, finishing up on drug interactions. So the first thing I think about with famotidine is generally we don't have a ton of drug interactions. So that's a nice thing. However, there are a couple things that come to the forefront of my mind when I think about this drug. So first and foremost, whenever we reduce acid in the stomach and the intestinal tract, we can affect the absorption of certain drugs. So some drugs need a more acidic environment to enhance or to have normal absorption. And a few of those examples, ceftriaxone, ketoconazole, there are definitely numerous HIV medications. So definitely think about that as far as drug interactions go. And when we're using H2 blockers, just recognizing if there's some of those medications that need a more acidic environment to have kind of their normal absorption patterns. And then the other one I wanted to mention was B12 deficiency. I alluded to it as a potential adverse effect. However, I want to remind you of drugs that could add to that low B12 deficiency effect. And really the most common one, diabetes agent metformin, definitely one that you should know. It comes up on board exams certainly all the time that you need to monitor B12 occasionally with metformin. And adding famotidine on board with metformin could have that additive effect. And then, of course, PPIs as well can reduce B12 levels. If you've got a patient on both famotidine and a PPI, which does happen occasionally, they may be a little bit even more at risk for B12 deficiency. All right, well, I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, found it helpful, please share us with friends, coworkers, students, preceptors, faculty members. We're trying to help as many people as we can learn pharmacology, and I'm grateful for all the support. So share us with those folks. Please take the time, leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. That helps us grow and reach more people. I'm greatly appreciative of those of you who have already done that. And of course, go sign up, reallifepharmacology.com, and support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. If you want to track me down, if you got any suggestions, comments, mededucation101@gmail.com, or you can find me at LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. I'm going to sign off for today, and I thank you so much for listening.